What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got a drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
The most important thing is being there for the client, yeah. Understanding their human story, actually caring about them, you know, helping them navigate this new life that they have to live now, right? Because they have to live a new life. Like they were perfectly healthy before, or, you know, they had this loved one before, now they don't. And you need to just be able to sit down and listen and understand what they're going through and really, really, really want to be there for them. And I have over 2,000 clients. I obviously can't talk to all of them.
Yeah.
But every 7-figure plus case that we've settled.
Yeah.
I've been very involved. I've talked to the clients. And again, I think it goes back to like how we first started. I've trained my staff and my staff believes in me. And, you know, they're able to talk to them and they're able to, you know, a lot of these people don't have health insurance, right? They can't go to a doctor. I mean, they just got in an accident and they can't go to a doctor.
Man.
Or they don't speak English. They only speak Spanish or, you know, they don't know what to do.
Right.
So we're there to help them. We're there to, you know, help them get to the right doctor, treat for their injuries, recover as much as possible, and then finally get them justice.
Yo, welcome to another episode of In a Minute with Evan Lovett, coming to you live from the I Am Studios in the heart of LA. And my guest today is a partner and a friend in an industry that isn't usually associated with heart. But this man, David Urielshami, has a lot of heart and he wears it on his sleeve. This is David Urielshami of Injury Needs, Urielshami Law Firm. It's high time you come in the studio. I've been asking you for over a year to come on in here and just introduce yourself to the people that already know you with our giveaways, with you helping people, with you doing great things with your business, with us, for the people of Los Angeles. David, thank you so much for coming in here.
Of course, man. Thank you so much for having me. I feel like, you know, I'm amongst greats. You've had so many amazing people on this podcast and I just, you know, I hope I could live up to the hype.
Absolutely. And listen, I've been chasing you down. I've been telling you to come on because every time we talk, you know, and we have this partnership, which is really good because I'm able to give tickets. We've given away Dodger tickets. We've given away Rams tickets, Disneyland tickets, but we've also been able to help people find a resource where they may not have help or they may not have the ability to kind of defend themselves when a certain situation comes up, whether it's pedestrian, car accident, anything like that. Your firm, your Urielshami Law Firm, Injury Needs, has helped people collect a lot of money and really changed a lot of lives. And I'm not saying this as bullshit, right? Like I'm on some of these calls. I see the calls that he posts, but I see the comments. I see how people are like, David, you've really helped me get a car. You know, I was pedestrian. I was metro. Like, you know, the settlements or the deals that we do are able to help me get a car or get a new car or get a down payment on a house or just get what's rightfully theirs when an insurance company or in a situation they get in something where otherwise they wouldn't have had somebody to defend them and stand up for their rights and stand up for them. And that's a big, important thing. So thank you for that. And thank you for coming in because I know that your heart's always in the right place. And you're going to see that this is a genuine human being with a great story. So I'm excited to have you on, man.
I appreciate that, man. I'm excited to be on too. You know, I So I've been asked to be on podcasts, and I wasn't really ready, but I told myself, 2026, I'm going to try to share a little bit more of the story. And this was the first place I wanted to do it. So I appreciate you having me.
Well, there we go. So first, let me give a shout out to our sponsor, Arto Brick. You guys now at least know the name, fabricating historic tiles and bricks for LA landmarks. Alvera Street is my favorite. Plaza de Cultura y Artes, Mariachi Plaza, USC, of which David is an alum, by the way.
Right on.
And so many more. But thank you, Arto Brick, for running a factory manufacturing in Los Angeles, where they say it's so hard to do business, but he's employing dozens of people and he is a third generation LA American dream story. So support Arto Brick, and Arto Brick, thank you for supporting the show. But let's start with David. So, okay, your firm Injury Needs has honestly collected millions of dollars for people in a pretty short period of time. Now, that's another thing that's impressive. And I got to set the tone on that too, is when David and I meet face to face or when we talk, one thing that I love and that we connect over, all right, Mamba mentality, which we know is a big LA ethos. But this man does not sleep. This is hard work. This is hustle. This is dedication. And you guys know how I produce. And this is somebody that I'm like, all right, we see eye to eye on that. So first thing I want to get into, how did you start your own firm and build it into something? Because I've seen, when I go in there, again, talk about dozens of employees, penthouse office, like great big old suites. Like, how did you build something like that in such a small period of time? Like, give us the origin first of the firm. And then we're going to go into your background, which is fascinating as well.
Listen, it's a good question. I think, first of all, a lot of this is, I don't know if I believe in luck, but I believe in blessings. So, I think God has definitely blessed me. And it's really, really, really hard work, man. Like we email back and forth at late at night. Yep. on weekends.
This guy's
like,
always around, always available. I can attest.
I mean, I'm a dog. And like, that's what it is. Like, I want to win so bad. Like, this is what I want. Ever since I was a kid, ever since I can remember, I just want to be the best. And I think it goes to like that Mamba mentality. And, I've always been an entrepreneur, always selling things since I was young, selling phones on Craigslist, whatever I could get my hands on.
Yeah.
I took a little bit of money out of student loans actually while I was at USC and put it in the stock market, like $12,000. By the time I
don't try that at home, kids.
Now it'd be crypto.
But yeah,
I don't recommend it. But I did it and it worked. And by the time I graduated law school, I had it turned into like $60,000. And I was blessed to have a really good mentor that I worked for a year before I passed the bar. And as soon as I passed the bar, I was just ready to start. And I put that $60,000 into, marketing. I used his office and I just kept doubling down. Every time I settled a case, I kept putting the money back into the business. I think 2021, we hired our first employee. Now we're 50 people in-house and like 20 VAs. We've done well over $100 million in settlements in the past, few years. I think 4 or 5 years. I think close to 50 last year.
Yeah. Wow.
So I think it's just really having faith in God and in myself and just putting one foot in front of the other and keep going. And what makes what I do specifically easy is that not only is there, big opportunity for success, but I also get to genuinely help people who are going through a hard time. And, those two things together just make me unstoppable, man.
I'll tell you this. When you see those phone calls and like, what, David, did you invent this? Is that your thing with the calls? Like, he'll call someone when he settles the case. He'll call somebody, surprise them with the good news. And it's like, it's pretty exciting because sometimes they will straight up scream and yell like, ah, 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 ah. And like, it really is like changing somebody's life after what was something that changed their life in such a negative way. And that's a blessing in itself to be able to do that, to come in and like present that news. But behind the scenes is that hard work and that skill and that savvy and knowing how to make it all work and come together. I want to know first, how did you come up with the idea? Because I feel like that's something that kind of really like put you on the map where we're like the phone calls, right?
So it's a great question. I first of all, I am the first person who did it. I don't think anyone else did it before me.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really something I came up with. My favorite part of doing this was whenever we called clients and told them their case settled.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would have like, you know, I had a, like one or two employees at the time. I would have them come to my office and like we would call the client and, you know, we wanted to tell them their case settled and it was like hype and like we wanted to get the reaction. And we had this one specific client, Chris, who was in a really bad accident.
Right.
And he lived in his car. So, you know, his car was totaled and he had nowhere to live.
Yeah.
And he was just devastated. He was injured. He didn't have a place to live. And, you know, we had like an $18,000 offer and the policy limits were $200,000.
And this is like from the insurance companies, right? That's like the majority of like how it's working and who you're dealing with. And they try to lowball it, right?
Yes.
Because they want to just go like that. Here you go. Get out of our face. Like, have a good life, right?
Exactly.
And for somebody who lost not just their car, but their home and their transportation to even try to make a living, 18 grand isn't going to cut it. Not in this city.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he had medical bills and, oh, yeah, and you know, and all those things too.
Right.
So, you know, the 18 grand was, you know, barely going to cover his medical bills. Yeah. I mean, he would have netted probably, you know, a couple thousand dollars if he was lucky.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we called him and he's like, accept the 18 grand. Like, I need these $2,000. I just want to, you know, get a place to live. And I was like, Chris, give me 2 weeks, man. You know, just give me 2 weeks.
Okay.
And, you know, he agreed to give me 2 weeks and we settled the case in 2 weeks for $200,000. So I was like, Leah's my first employee. Come in the office. We're calling this guy and we're getting it on video. And can I curse on this?
Of course.
Okay.
Of
so,
course.
You know, I was so hyped that I was on the phone with him and I was like, don't fuck with me, Chris. And we got this on video and I'm in a t-shirt. I have a dog on my lap.
Yeah.
I'm a lawyer. And I sent it to my friend, you know, not expecting my friend Alex, my best friend, you know, not expecting to like ever put this on Instagram. And he's like, man, you have to put this on Instagram. And I have mentors that, you know, have been doing this for a long time. And I showed them and like, bro, you cannot, you're a lawyer.
I was kidding. Okay.
You cannot sit behind a desk with a t-shirt and a dog, you know, and cursing and put this on Instagram.
Yes.
And I was like, you know what? This is who I am.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and you're talking about like success. Like, I think I've been very successful because I've, you know, thank God I've never tried to be who I'm not. I'm myself. I've, you know, I've grown into this person. I've had crazy life experiences who have made me who I am. And I was like, you know what? This is who I am. I come to work in a t-shirt every day and I do a really good job and I need to share this with the world. And we put it on and the rest is history, man. Everyone loved it. And, you know, now we're doing it and it's just, it's taken a life of its own.
And it's pretty legit. And look, he has a ton of followers and a ton of like legit engagement. You could tell. And here's one thing I want to put out there too. You hear injury lawyer or PI lawyer and there's this negative stigma and people are like, oh God, and blah, blah, blah. But then you meet David and you use the word genuine. And this is the truth. Like from our meetings, from our calls, every time we've had interactions, I'm like, again, going back to the heart concept where I'm like, he really does care and he really is this good person. And I'll never forget the first time we ever went out to lunch together. We were in his office, go to, you know, do our meet and greet, blah, blah, blah. Show me around the office. And we go downstairs and we're walking around Beverly Hills. And it's like I'm walking with the biggest celebrity in town. Like it could have been Kim Kardashian, George Clooney, like Rick Caruso, everybody. And not just in his building. Like I'm talking around the neighborhood. Hugs. What's up, David? Oh, David, how you doing? And it's like, with a positive interaction, with a smile. And you don't think of attorneys like that in any kind of attorney, but in the personal injury space, you definitely don't think like that. And I think that that's something that's important. And part of the reason that I wanted to have you on, because it's like breaking that stereotype, that stigma where it's not just bullshit of wanting to help people. Like you really do care and you come from such a good place. Where is that? Was that family background? Was it upbringing? Like what about you made you like that?
Yeah. So first of all, I really do care.
Yeah.
You know, I have amazing parents that, you know, taught me how important it is. You know, if with high responsibility comes, you know, you owe to God who gave you, you know, this type of responsibility to make sure you do the best thing with it. So I care about every single client. I also do think we just live in an environment where, you know, maybe 15, 20 years ago, you could be a motherfucker and get away with it. But now you really have to be a good person because people have choices, right?
Yeah.
They, you know, before switching your lawyer or finding a lawyer, like you needed to know someone, you need to ask them. Now all you need to do is go online and just find someone. It's the same thing with employees. Like if an employee wanted to leave, you know, they had to go door to door, you know, hand out their resume. Now all they need to go is on Indeed and submit their resume, and you know they can find a job. So not only do you have to be good to your clients and really care about them because they have options and they, you know the world, but they also know what a genuine person is.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to be good to them. You have to be good to the people who work for you because right. they're also, I mean, you can only do so much by yourself, right? The people who work for you need to not only care about you and, you know, the mission, but when you're helping people, your employees are talking to them. If your employees don't care about you and know that you care about your clients,
yeah.
the message isn't going to get across because they're not going to be genuine.
You need to, and I'm glad you brought up your team because I've dealt with people on his team. And let me tell you, I'm not always easy to deal with behind the scenes. I'm doing 100 different things, going 100 different directions. And I've made it hard for some of your staff, difficult conversations or putting things together. But people are loyal to you and people are like David first. And in this day and age, especially, man, my wife's hired people, gone through employees. You know, I've got hired people, gone through employees. Anybody sees it like since COVID, but probably before that. But the saying is since COVID, like people don't care as much yeah. and they do have other options.
They want to work from home.
Yeah, they want to work. But it's like you're doing something right to have people respond to you like that and to be so loyal and protect you. And not like I was like trying, you know, doing some shit, but it's just like, oh shit, these people like legit care about David. And again, a testament to what he's doing. And so I want to get into that in its root level. Okay. Let's talk about your origin story. You're Persian.
Yes.
Your family is from Iran, which especially now is big in the news with everything that's going on there. But it's been a story in L.A. at least since the revolution in 79. I mean, Tehrangelis in Westwood, the Persian community in Los Angeles, one of the biggest Persian community in the world outside of Iran, but one of the biggest communities in Los Angeles and one of the most important and one of the most proud. Your parents came from there. Tell us about, you know, that journey and sort of what you can speak on to the culture in Los Angeles and just how that sort of shaped you.
Yeah. So I'm Persian Jewish. My parents had to flee Iran, you know, mostly because they were Jewish and they were no longer welcome there when Khomeini came. My dad's story specifically is, you know, very interesting one. He had a neighbor that, you know, when he was a military age after the revolution and he didn't show up, you know, for the military because the military was mandatory there. And his neighbor told on him and the Revolutionary Guard was coming. And, you know, back then when the Revolutionary Guard comes, I mean, there's, you know, there's only one thing that's going to happen. You're probably going to be dead or, wow. you know, something close to that.
Yeah.
So my dad had to literally pack up his bags within less than 24 hours and leave through camel on.
Wow.
In Pakistan and leave everything behind. Didn't get to say bye to his parents. We actually, you know, met his parents for the first time in 2018 when they moved to Israel. But, you know, I think these stories,
yeah.
you know, and, you know, just watching what my parents went through to be here.
Right.
And, you know, I owe it to them to be successful, right? They sacrificed everything to be here.
Yeah.
And I not only owe it to them to be successful, but I, you know, my grandfather who, you know, was one of the closest people to me and, you know, always told me, you know, because I always wanted to be successful and I always told him this. And he said, you know, when you reach the greatest heights, don't ever forget where you came from.
Yes.
And, you know, by don't forget where you came from, you know, your roots, like you have to be humble. You know, God gave you this. So I think, you know, watching those stories and those sacrifices and those hardships that my family made for me to be here and then seeing my parents who, you know, my first language was Farsi. They didn't really know, you know, too much about the United States or how it operated or, you know, things like that. Watching them being taken advantage of.
Did they come to Los Angeles right off the bat?
My mom went to New York for a little while. My dad came to Los Angeles and they actually met in LA. Then my mom came to LA.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, man, God bless the people of Iran. You know, it's tragic what's going on there.
Right.
It's a crazy time. I hope, you know, hopefully there's a revolution and, you know, a new leadership comes because the people of Iran, they deserve it, man.
Yeah. People are very passionate about it. It's a big deal in LA and I did a story in LA in a minute on it. kind of, you know, just objective facts, but it was, people really care. And I think it's one of those issues that sort of in everything that's going on now, something that may not have the focus that it probably deserves, especially here in Los Angeles with the big community.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
True North Stores beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you are craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got a drink for you. As a true rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
I'm Mark Sullinger, producer and one of the hosts of The Moth Podcast. For nearly 2 decades, The Moth has brought live storytelling to stages around the world and to millions of listeners. These are real people telling true stories from their lives. Stories about a lost family recipe, about working to free a wrongfully convicted man, about realizing you need to leave your May-December romance. Stories that will move you, surprise you, make you laugh. Stories you can't forget. Join us. Follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
But now growing up, I know that you have one of the things that touched me the most about David is, you know, back when we first started talking, you know, I was going through his old feed, saw some Kobe stuff, you know, and I'm like, I know he's a good guy. He's, you know, like, but there was also an interview that you gave at Beverly Hills High School. Right. Why was that special to you to speak at Beverly Hills? Because I know, and I know how hard it was for me to get you here, like, and to do this kind of like presentation. That's a little bit different, but talk to me about that.
So I had an interesting childhood, especially as, you know, Persian Jew. I was kind of the black sheep of my community. I got arrested, you know, probably over 20 times. I spent 8 months in juvenile hall and, you know, camp, and then 3 months in LA County Jail.
Wow.
I ended up eulogizing the judge that sentenced me. I eulogized my cellmate who, you know, helped change my life. I got kicked out of Beverly High.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, at the time, a lot of the people, their parents didn't want them to hang out with me and stuff like that. I, you know, I ended up, a judge took a chance on me and I wanted to prove him right.
Right.
And, you know, I'm also a big believer that you always go back to your roots. And I just had really good roots, man. I had amazing, wonderful parents who I put through hell. And, yeah, you know, hopefully not made up for it. But I had to, you know, I had to go to Beverly High because I got kicked out of that school and they invited me for career day.
Yes.
So, you know, I had to take my mom and sit her in the front and watch, you know, have her watch me talk to all these kids.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, Chris Anderson, who was the security guard when I went to Beverly High, is still one of the security guards there. And he walked in and he was like, what? it looked like he saw a ghost. And like, it made all the kids like, he was like, I would never expect to see you here.
That's the best. Yeah.
So just to, you know, just to have my mom, I mean, that was probably, you know, one of the most satisfying things ever in my life, to be able to take my mom to the school that I was kicked out of, to watch me give a speech to all the students.
So it was all the trouble that you were getting into that kind of changed everything, right?
It's a lot of stuff.
Right.
And it's probably, you know, a conversation that I will want to get into one day, and it's a long one, but I think it taught me so much that I wouldn't change for everything. Like, just being in those environments, being in jail, you know, being exposed to something different, because, you know, as a Persian Jew, and I did have a lot of privilege. Not to get it, but like, I also, as a young kid, I watched my dad lose everything to a partner who kind of, you know, had an affair with their bookkeeper and ended up screwing him over. And I, you know, he never recovered. So, you know, that kind of stuff. So going through these things, watching that happen to him, you know, being able to relate to so many different people.
Yeah.
I think it's helped me with my clients, right? Because I've lived so many different lives. I can get on the phone and relate to anyone and empathize with them. And I think they feel that.
Yes.
And when I see what they're going through, you know, I can relate to it. I think it really helps me get them a better result, share their story and be there for them. Because, you know, at the end of the day, that's the most important thing. People need someone to be there for them and believe in them.
And I think you said a magic word there was empathy, especially with in your profession, which is a rarity. I mean, being able to relate, to communicate, to understand, and just to be there, as you said, is something that's so important because there's a lot of people with bad intentions in your space. And again, I've seen the relationships you've developed and what you've been able to accomplish. So I want to go to your kind of upbringing after, let's say, the epiphanies, you know.
I also do want to say one thing.
Yeah,
sorry.
For sure.
So I do think personal injury lawyers get a bad rap because there's a few bad apples that unfortunately, but listen, it's not just me who cares. There's a lot of people who care, and there's a lot of people who I've been blessed to be able to pick their brain and have taught me. I mean, I'm riding on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be here without, you know, a community of good people. But yeah, it's unfortunate. There are people who, you know, have done wrong things, and that kind of shines a bad light onto the rest of the people who are actually really trying to do good and help people. And there's so many of them. So I want to.
And look, I don't want to paint with a broad brush in the other direction, but a lot of the time you're fighting against insurance companies.
Yes.
And again, you know, those aren't exactly the most sympathetic character, the most people care. Unfortunately, you know, they should be. You know, you have your insurance for a reason, to be your cushion or your safety net. And, you know, so often I know this with health insurance, you know, fortunately nothing major, but even just little things or even, and this is a very minor seeming example, but you'll get it. Like, I have pet insurance and my dog had two eye surgeries and cancer, and you want to guess how much and paying every month. And there's always some, yo, no, we're not going to cover that. Or one set of, you know, the last thing he had an eye surgery was $1,200. They paid $51 of it. And you're like, come on, man. I'm almost like, why even bother? Why even bother? And like you hear that all the time. Like you was saying, like Dave was saying earlier, $18,000 on something that was worth $200,000 to them, you know? And it's like, so fighting for people to get what they really do deserve in these instances is something that's really necessary.
I have a case right now where the lady was hit by a commercial vehicle.
Yeah.
They showed up, offered her $2,000 to sign a release. Thankfully, she called me.
Yeah.
This was like 3 years ago. Yeah. We have an offer on the table right now for $1 million. We're not taking it. Our last demand was $11 million. And, you know, we're litigating the case. We're going to fight it. And hopefully we're going to get her millions of dollars. But I mean, I see this all the time. Like, you get in an accident with a truck. Somebody shows up at your door the next day and tries to offer you $400 or $1,000 just because you live in the hood and they think you don't know better. You don't speak English. You're Hispanic, or, you know, they try to take advantage of you.
Yeah.
And these insurance companies are, you know, real bad people, man.
You know, there's a guy named Luigi out there who, I'm not going there, but no, hey, I'm not advocating that, but no. So it really is important, but I want to talk about the development, right? So you got kicked out of high school. How did you end up at USC undergrad after that? What was the path that you took to end up at USC undergrad and then law school and beyond?
So I went to SMC.
Okay. By the way, California community colleges are a gem and a jewel and an amazing resource. My wife, my mom, my dad, all firsthand people that I've seen succeed. One of my best friend, college roommate, like the community colleges is a great, great, great route. I just want to plug that because I'm a huge advocate for our community colleges. Sorry, go ahead.
I guess, I never did well with authority. I don't like people telling me what to do.
Okay.
So in high school and stuff, you're really like, you're trapped, you know, people telling you what to do. I guess later, and I was always pretty bright.
Yeah.
I just never really, you know, applied myself to school.
Same story.
But I went to Santa Monica College, you know, to a certain extent, I finessed my way through there.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, by the grace of God, I got into USC. And when I got into USC, I knew it was game time, man. And I had a business. I actually had a partner. We were, you know, selling iPhones and iPads and stuff like that to, we sold them to Dwight Howard. I mean, like a lot of, you know, celebrities, because at that time it was like hard to get an iPad or an iPhone when it first came out.
Yeah, dude. It was, I remember those lines.
Yeah, it was a crazy line. So like we were getting them right away and, you know, we were doing well. I was making good money for, you know, 20 something year old.
Especially in college, of course. Yeah.
But I was like, you know what? That's it. I got into USC. I'm not going to fuck around. I mean, there was times where I would get a motel across the street just so I could take naps. I wouldn't go home. Like I would take a 2-hour nap and study. Cause I mean, I had a lot of studying to do because I was not used to reading or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah.
So I worked really, I mean, anyone who went to USC with me will tell you that I was probably the hardest worker there. Wow. I was always in the library, always studying. I graduated top 5 in my class.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah.
And it was a second chance at life. So I had to take advantage of it. And, you know, that was it. I was going to have integrity. I was going to put in the work. I wasn't going to, you know, mess around. I wasn't going to cheat myself. And I made it, man.
So how'd you know you wanted to go into law though?
It's a good question. I think I always, you know, dabbled in it because of the trouble I had gotten into. I wanted to be a criminal defense attorney.
Yeah.
My criminal defense attorney was, you know, I watched her take advantage of my parents. And, you know, she would, you know, for example, like tell my parents like, oh, if you don't do this, this and this, like you don't pay me this much, your son's going to go to jail for 10 years. Just like, you know, and my parents would get really scared and give her whatever she asked for, right? Because they didn't grow up in the United States. My parents are simple, you know, good, hardworking people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to be different and I wanted to be a lawyer and do good for people. So I didn't really know if it was possible because of my record. And I actually had to write a 116-page autobiography to the bar. And I had a meeting with the entire moral character. You know, it's getting through the bar for me. It took me a year. So I passed the bar, but it took me a year. But I really wanted to be a criminal defense attorney. Life has a weird way of, you know, doing things. I think at some point, God willing, I definitely still want to do some type of pro bono criminal defense stuff.
Okay.
Not for the money, just because I want to, you know, do things that I want to do.
Yeah.
But one of my friends met this, you know, lawyer at a party and, you know, was like, look, you should go interview with this guy. And I went and interviewed with him. His name is David Maccabee. And I loved personal injury because it gave you the chance to be very successful and help people at the same time.
Yeah.
And he became my mentor and he taught me so much. I went to him the first day. I was like, look, it's going to take me some time to get into the bar. I want to be upfront with you. I have this rap sheet. You know, I don't know when but I'll come here. I'll put in the fucking work. I'll work for, you know, minimum wage, whatever it is. But once I become a lawyer, I want to start my own firm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to his credit, he was like, okay. And I kept my promise and he kept his and he helped me and he mentored me and he taught me a lot. And now I'm here.
Where was he based?
He's actually in the same building I am.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And my first office was out of his office. So he gave me an office rent free because I mean, again, I had $60,000. I mean, it seems like it is a lot of money, but I'm in an industry where people are spending $5 million a month on marketing, right?
Ridiculous. Yeah. And again, in LA, unfortunately, like 60 grand isn't 60 grand. Yeah. Like, that's a rough. Yeah. So go.
Yeah. I mean, like my competitors at the time were spending millions of dollars a month just on ads.
Still. Like, yeah. Right.
So he gave me an office. I did some work for him on the side. And then again, I just, you know, I got blessed and, you know, I kept doubling down and now I'm spending my overhead is, you know, not that much, but very high, 7 figures a month.
Yeah. Jeez, that's incredible. And again, it's a testament to the work you've done and what you've accomplished though, because with that size comes the success, but with the success comes the investment and the need to keep growing. So, I mean, it speaks for itself, but you went to law school in New York, right?
Yes.
Tell me about that. And what were your thoughts on New York and just what was New York like? And I know as a law student, you probably didn't get to have the full New York experience, but what was it still?
So I love New York City, man. New York City, there's nothing like it. I mean, LA, I wouldn't rather be anywhere but LA to live full time. But when you're young and ambitious, there's nowhere like New York because it gives you vision. You know, the people there are all fucking hungry. Like, they all come there. Man. Like, all the young people come from all over the country and even the world.
Yes.
Because they are just, you know, they're dogs and they want to get it. So I think a lot more than school, I just learned about life and ambition and, you know, like just vision. I got vision being there.
Were you there 3 years?
I was there 2.5 okay. years, yeah. Okay. I ended up here. I had some stuff come up, like with my health, that I had to, you know, move back to LA, and I was able to finish here for there.
That's cool. Okay. But in New York, let's talk about New York for a sec, because ambition is the word. And like, yeah, look, you guys know I love LA more than anything in this world, but New York is, if you're not on your game 100% of the time, the second you leave your front door, like, forget about it. Because I always say this, I go for 2 days, 3 days, maybe 4 days, and I'm like, it's one of the best places in the world, and you love it, and you feel that energy, but it's exhausting. And the ambition, the level of that, that you feel on the streets, just walking around, whether you're in Brooklyn or Midtown or wherever you are, like, you gotta be, and for me,
you're making me miss New York.
and that's what I'm saying. You gotta be cut from a specific cloth, because in LA, you can, this is a silly example, but I think it's a good example. In LA, and I do this, you can walk outside, be on your cell phone.
Just, you can have a 2-hour lunch in LA.
Yeah. Scrolling Instagram, walk around, sit down on somebody's lawn and like relax. Like, and in New York, man, if you're looking down for 1 second, boom, you take one in the shoulder. And like, you better know where you're going, what you're doing. You got to have that focus.
Yes.
And you got to have that drive. And it's exhausting, man. So, and yes, if you make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. And I get that. I think that that's a truism. But one of the reasons why I love LA is because we don't have to have that all the time. But that sort of shaped you. And that's a reflection of who you are, because you are so driven. So, I mean, it fueled your later success.
100%. I wouldn't trade going to New York for anything. It taught me so much. Even the people, you know, one of my best friends that I still talk to very often, Doriel.
Yeah.
We met in law school. And, you know, just the people. It's just, you know, so I have a lot of young, you know, I don't want to call them kids, but, you know, younger people reaching out to me almost every single day. I mean, I think most of the people who want to start a law firm are, you know, who are in law school or, you know, undergrad, are calling my office or DMing us on Instagram or, you know what, because, you know, I think I'm relatable. I'm not in a suit. You know, these young guys that, you know, I think, you know, we've set a standard where, you know, people see that what's possible. And they always ask me for advice, like kids going into college. I, you know, again, like even the kids from Beverly High.
Yeah.
And the one thing I tell them is, listen, we live in, especially right now with like ChatGPT and AI and all this stuff, YouTube. I mean, the information is all there. Yeah. You know, you don't need to go far to get the information.
Right.
What sets you apart is the experience, right? Getting out of your comfort zone, being able to relate to people, being real, knowing who you are.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of stuff that's going to differentiate you. Everyone has the information. It's not like before. Information is only going to get you so far. So going to New York, getting out of my comfort zone, you know, I lived here my whole life, moving there, starting law school, having to meet new people, putting myself out there, networking on, you know, all these things, working hard, experiencing different weather. Was the first time I was ever in the snow.
Oh,
you know,
just good boy. I didn't even
count. Yeah, like that, you know, you think like it's not a big deal, but like here, you know, most of the time you can go out and do whatever you want. But like, what about when it's fucking snowing?
You need to
get to fucking school, or you need to walk back from the library at 2 a.m. in the snow because, you know, you need to study. You know, it's a different ball game, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're probably walking or having to take the subway, or, you know, just like interacting with so many different people that you don't get a chance to hear. Again, I wouldn't trade being in LA for anything. Yeah. I love LA. That's why I came back.
It hardens you and it sharpens you, man.
But just, I would tell anyone trying to, you know, any young person who wants to make it, I the number one piece of advice I would give them, and it's kind of cliche, but get out of your fucking comfort zone. Do things that you're not comfortable with. Meet new people. Go to new places, because especially now, I think it's more important than ever.
What is it? That saying, there's a saying, it says, be comfortable being uncomfortable, or something like that, right?
100%.
And that is the truth. And it's like, when I do public speaking or events, and it's just like, oh, you're the LA Minute guy. Just talk about LA. And it's like, yeah, of course, I love talking about LA. If you come up to me on the street, I'll talk about it. I'll talk your ear off about LA, but it's different. And you do get nervous, and it is difficult, but you just got to do it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing at the end of the day is you have to make yourself do it. And then I always say, like, once you're doing it, you're doing it. Like there's no more safety net. So just go.
The first step is the hardest.
Yes. Oh man. Absolutely. And that reminds, this is a stupid tangent. I remember having to do papers or term papers in college, right? And you get this assignment. It'd be like 20 pages on whatever the fuck, right? And you're like, oh my God, I don't want to read this stupid poetry book or something. And I'm like, how am I going to write 20 pages? And you wait for the last minute. It's like the night before. It's due Friday. It's like Thursday night at 9 p.m. You're like, well, I guess I'll start this thing, right? Like, and I just remember, you're like, where do you even start? And it's so dumb, but it would help me writing a title page. I remember, like, I would write a title page and be like, all right, I started. Like, that's nothing. That has nothing to even, like, do with the assignment. But at that point in my mind, I'd be like, we're doing this. Now this paper's going, so I gotta do it from there. But it's kind of like, that first step's the hardest, and that's the one that if you do, you're going to be able to do it from that point forward.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, someone told me, my cousin Shahram, when I was trying to decide, so I kind of touched on how, you know, I had a business and then I got into USC.
Yeah.
I wasn't so sure I wanted to go to college. You know, I think that, you know, making money and being successful to a certain extent comes naturally to me.
Yeah.
I think the skills are transferable. I probably could have been successful at a lot of things that I did.
Agreed.
Because I'm a hustler. That's who I am.
Of course. That's the mentality.
One thing he said to me that, you know, really stuck with me, and then someone else also told me something, but one is, you know, you go to school to learn how to learn. It's not the information, right? You learn how to learn. And it's such an important point because it's so overlooked. Like, it's like what you said, right? Like, you don't want to do it. And it's like, it kind of maybe seems like bullshit. Like, you don't need this information, but you're learning how to do things. You're learning to learn.
Man, this is such an important point on a larger scale, especially now, because I always hear this narrative about, oh, college isn't important. And like, college isn't what it used to be. Like, I get that. I get that, like, and I'm a sociology major, so I'm like, I get that your sociology degree isn't really going to pave too many paths for you in life, right? History, literature, I get all that. But that's not why you're going to college, right? And like, listen, the experience in itself is great, and you're learning how to live life and how to do things, but it's just like you said, you're learning how to learn and stay within the system or stay within to succeed within people's confines or these structures, because guess what? In the real world, there's all kinds of like nebulous things that you need to do or certain tasks that you need to do to pay your bills and just life skills.
100%.
And it's teaching you these things, learning how to learn. This is a brilliant way to put it.
And we interview, I mean, I think over the past 5 years, I've had hundreds of interviews of, you know, college graduates from the top universities. I mean, I've interviewed people from Harvard, from Penn, from UCLA, USC that want to come, you know, work for us. And I see their resume and, you know, I start asking them questions and like, that's really what I'm looking for. Like, okay, great. Yeah. You went to UCLA. That says a lot about you. Right.
Right.
But like, what have you done in your life? Like, what obstacles have you overcome? You know, what challenges have you had? Have you worked at school? Like, a lot of times I much rather hire someone who worked at Starbucks for like 2 years than someone who like had an internship at like a prestigious law firm. Cause like, if you had an internship at a prestigious law firm, 9 out of 10 times, your parents probably knew someone and put you there. And that's the only reason you got the job, right? But if you were at Starbucks and you're dealing with all these people, you're hustling, you have a good work ethic, and like, I'm going to trust you.
Man, one of my really good friends, Jimmy Guaman, shout out Jimmy. I'm actually wearing a shirt, ABH. This is always be hustling, right? And he's a guy that isn't the traditional intellectual, let's say. And he's smart. He's smart as hell, but like testing, you know, standardized testing, stuff like that. But it's the hustle and it's the work ethic and it's the balancing people's emotions and being able to read people and knowing how to work within those relationships. Like it, and I mean relationship, even like you said at Starbucks, you have that quick fleeting relationship with a customer. Like they just want their latte or whatever. That's a relationship. And you have to react because you don't know what emotional state they're in. They're going to treat you like an asshole sometimes and all this kind of stuff. And being able to deal with that and being able to do your work and focus on all these tasks, it's really important. It's more important than just the scholastic 99 percentile like test takers that I've encountered a lot of those people, as I'm sure you have. And you're like, man, like this person is not going to be able to succeed in a real world, real interpersonal relationship.
More than ever now because of AI.
Oh man, don't get me started. I'm somewhat of a Luddite that's, I don't fully adopt and embrace technology, but that one scares me. That'll be for a different. Okay. Let's talk about what I want to talk about, personal injury law for a sec. Take me through like a day in the life. And I know that we only have so much time. Yeah. So I know one of your days, like a 20-hour day, but like, tell me the nuts and bolts on like cases you see, how you deal with cases, like what is a procedure, or give us an example. What's a good way to have somebody like really realize what it is that you do in that kind of context?
So a lot of what I do now is like manage a business because I have so many employees and stuff like that. So I get into the office, I'm answering emails, I'm putting out fires, you know, I'm negotiating very high level cases.
Yeah.
But most of what we see is auto accidents where, you know, people are pretty badly injured. I mean, one, you know, and a lot of people, you know, may take this, like when someone says their neck hurts or whatever, but one really good example I heard is like, just think about, you know, have you ever had a night where like you go to sleep and you sleep the wrong way and you wake up and your neck hurts?
Of course, I'm over 40, bro.
Yeah.
It's more often than not.
And it affects almost everything you're doing that day, right? Now imagine that, you know, you're just this innocent person on your way to work, boom, you get hit by a truck, and now you have that neck pain every single day for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it's a huge deal. It affects everything
you do. Solid with my parents. Absolutely.
And, you know, that's just on a small scale, right? I mean, I have a lot of my clients have traumatic brain injuries. You know, we have amputation cases. You know, we have, you know, unfortunately, death cases. So I think the most important thing is being there for the client, understanding their human story, actually caring about them, you know, helping them navigate this new life that they have to live now, right? Because they have to live a new life. Like they were perfectly healthy before, or, you know, they had this loved one before, now they don't. And you need to just be able to sit down and listen and understand what they're going through and really, really, really want to be there for them. And it can't, I mean, I can't tell you, I mean, I have over 2,000 clients. I obviously can't talk to all of them.
Yeah.
But every seven-figure plus case that we've settled, I've been very involved. I've talked to the clients. And again, I think it goes back to like how we first started. I've trained my staff and my staff believes in me, and, you know, they're able to talk to them and they're able to, you know, a lot of these people don't have health insurance, right? They can't go to a doctor. I mean, they just got in an accident and they can't go to a doctor.
Man.
Or they don't speak English. They only speak Spanish, or, you know, they don't know what to do.
Right.
So we're there to help them. We're there to, you know, help them get to the right doctor, treat for their injuries, recover as much as possible, and then finally get them justice.
And you're dealing with mostly insurance companies on the other side?
All I do is deal with insurance companies. I mean, insurance companies and their lawyers.
What is that like? I mean, how do you...
It's David versus Goliath, man.
Literal David versus Goliath.
And I'm just fucking having a great time teaching these insurance companies a lesson every single day. So, you know, that's...
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
True North Stores beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free.
Whether you are craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got a drink for you. As a true rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brayton, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brayton wherever you get your podcasts.
We do.
I got to say something that you kind of unlocked a core memory, as they say, but this is a true story. So my mom had a Toyota Celica that she bought at Hamer Toyota. Shout out Hamer Toyota, sponsor.
My mom actually had a Toyota Celica growing up too.
Yeah. Okay. So mom had a Toyota Celica, and I'll never remember. I mean, I'll never forget this. I come home and it was a tan, like that tan brown color, point is she loved her Celica. She loved this car. And all of a sudden I remember, and I was a little kid, and she comes home and the car was like being towed into our house, our driveway. And turns out my mom got in this accident. She was on the freeway and a big rig like cut her off or didn't see her and drove her into the barrier, you know, and she was injured. Her back hurt and all this kind of stuff. And this is in the 1980s. She never went to like an attorney or anything like this. And I don't know. I was too young to know, you know, the immediate ramifications, but I do know this is that started a lifetime of back problems. And she was a nurse. She was a registered proud nurse, Valley Presbyterian Hospital, Northridge Hospital, all those. She was a great caring person, but it started a life of back pain. And as she got older, it got worse and it was recurring. And then she was on medicine and then she needed surgery and then she needed a spinal fusion. And then her body rejected the spinal fusion.
And she never got a lawyer.
So she had to get the spinal fusion equipment removed, which was even worse. Then she got on the strong meds. And then by the end of her life, she was like addicted to these triple script like narcotics. And that, you know, that's a whole different pharma thing. But the point is, it all started with this car accident. And, you know, at the time, like, you're just, oh, I'm glad you're okay. But you don't realize that that's going to change. It changed her life. I mean, ask my wife. I always had to tell my wife, like, you know, my mom was a different person when I was growing up, because by the time I met my wife, she was, you know, my mom was still a great person, but she was clouded by all these meds and like totally different, always in pain and emaciated and all this kind of stuff. So this really does like change people's lives for the worse. And again, thank you to David for at least getting some compensation, because that surely would have helped, you know, and it could have sent her down a different path, just as far as the care all the way through that too. But
so sorry you had to go through that.
Yeah. But I mean, this is a real thing that people are dealing with, and it's great to have a resource like David, like Injury Needs, to be able to kind of fight for people, especially people who can't fight for themselves. Cause yeah, like your clientele does come from every walk in Los Angeles. And that's something that resonated with me, because, you know, LA in a Minute, we love to celebrate the city, the whole city, everybody in this awesome, diverse, rich, cultured city. And you're covering people from every single demographic, which is so important.
And we've been blessed to, you know, work with LA legends to get the word across, like you. You know, we work with so many different people from LA.
Yeah.
You know, we work with some guy, White Wall Stunts, who literally takes our hoodies and is passing them out around Skid Row every single week. We've hundreds of hoodies a month we're passing out.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it's also just great to be able to give back to the community, because at the end of the day, LA is home. And like, you know, just like if you're, especially like those people who are from LA and grew up here, you know, they see each other and they love each other and they know what's up. And, you know, being able to do this in my hometown and watch myself being able to change people's lives from across so many different spectrums. I mean, I've had clients who, you know, bought houses because we were able to settle their case. I mean, they literally called me like, hey man, I just want to let you know, like, I was living in a one bedroom apartment with my wife and two kids and we just bought a house. You know, so just that is worth more than any amount of money in the world. Like knowing that you had that effect on someone it's just priceless, man. It's priceless. And it keeps you grounded, and you know, it's just a blessing.
It's honestly, it's great. It reminds me of a Mac Miller line. One of my favorite artists, actually, I have a bobblehead here of Mac Miller, who
RIP
passed away in Studio City, LA transplant. There's a song that he has that, you know, making somebody smile. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he said, making somebody smile is prettier than any picture that Monet could have painted, you know, and to have that feeling, to get, to be able to evoke that kind of emotion, that happiness. Okay. We're running a little bit out of time, so I want to kind of wind it down, but I do want to talk about something important. I know that there is a big, how do you explain it? With Uber, they're putting something on the ballot this year, right? That's going to limit people's ability to, claim liability, or to accuse Uber of liability. Phrase this for me, because all I know is this, is Uber's putting something on the ballot that's being billed as consumer friendly. But what it really is limiting the ability of somebody who is in potentially in a situation to get what they really deserve in a settlement. Yeah. Explain it better.
Well, it's going to kill car accident victims' rights to recover. So
okay, tell me.
There's been a bunch of, and a lot of people know a lot more about this than I do. And yeah. I'm hopefully going to work with you to get them on the show.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a bunch of New York Times articles that came out where Uber has had sexual assaults reported to them every 8 minutes.
True.
Yep. And they've done the bare minimum. I mean, this has come up through discovery, and, you know, we have their files and, you know, we see what they said. They've done the bare minimum to stop it. They put profits over people.
Right.
And now essentially what they're trying to do is just make it impossible for someone who was involved in any car accident to be able to recover. And how they're framing it is that accident victims should end up with 75% of their recovery.
Okay.
But what happens when an accident victim ends up with 75% of the recovery?
Right.
That means they can't get the medical care they need,
right,
because medical care is expensive. And the only way you can end up with 75% is if you're using Medi-Cal or Medicare,
right,
to go to the doctor. Because if not, it's going to cost you probably more than 25% just for medical bills, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, on a $1 million case, I mean, it's someone who's really badly injured. In order to get a surgery, like the fusion surgery, you know, you said it's going to cost you upwards of $100,000 just for that. That doesn't even include all the follow-up appointments and all those things. So after an accident, you're not going to be able to go to the doctor that you want to go to. Uber's going to, you know, stop that. But that's not what a person's going to think when they see, oh, I end up at 75%. They're going to be so happy. So that's why it's important to educate the public, right? And then obviously lawyers have to make money too.
I was going
to
say that. That's a big thing, right?
So what Uber's going to say is, oh, you know, you can just, you know, submit this to the insurance company. You don't need a lawyer.
Right.
And you can just use this 25% for medical care. But that's not how this works. I mean, you know, there's costs associated with being a lawyer. There's overhead. I mean, we just talked about, you know, big costs. So Uber is trying to, you know, fool the public and, you know, lie in order to protect themselves, because they want to put these personal injury lawyers and, you know, just civil rights lawyers, because that's what we are. At the end of the day, we're protecting people's civil rights, right? Yeah. They don't want us to sue them for the rapes that happen in Ubers. They want to put us out of business, because if we can't take auto cases, which are our bread and butter, then we can't go after them for the rapes. We can't go after them for the sexual assaults. And then essentially they can just put these autonomous cars onto the street and they can hit anyone, and Uber has a license to just get away with it, right?
Wow.
That's Uber's big plan. That's why they're pouring $500 million into this ballot in 2026.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot more on that. This is very new. We just heard about it, but
it's a big deal. You guys are going to hear, listen, the election's in November. I mean, we had the primaries before, but that's on the ballot in November. And I know as a fact, from September on, you're going to be inundated with, whether it's commercials when you're on TV or online, ads, all this kind of stuff. But I think a big part, and I'll say this on your behalf, is with the 25% lawyers' fees, lawyers that run firms, there is a big cost associated with that. And people are like, oh, well, we don't want the lawyers involved. Well, guess what? Without the lawyers involved, you're getting $2,000 settlement instead of $100,000 settlement. So would you want 75% of $2,000 or a smaller percentage of a much larger number? And I think that that's a big thing, where you see the 75% and you're like, oh, of course, like, it's better for the consumer, but it's not, because you're not exercising your rights. You're almost being shoehorned. You're funneled into this like settlement where it's like, oh, great, I get this bigger percentage on a way lower dollar amount. And overall, it's a net negative for the consumer. So I think that's important to keep in mind. And we're going to keep an eye on that one and keep talking about this one as this year develops, because there's a lot of things on the docket, but that's going to be a big one that you're going to keep hearing about.
I mean, on a $100,000 case, you'd be lucky to end up that settles for like $100,000 with Uber's new law. I think you'd be lucky to probably net $1,000 if you're lucky.
Yeah. And of course, you know, when these big companies put stuff like that, you know, it's not for the good of the people. All right, backing off a little bit from the legal. Tell me about L.A. What are your favorite things about L.A., man? What do you love about this city? Because I know you love this city.
I mean, other than the weather, which is like 80 degrees on January.
Dude.
In January, you should go outside and go to the beach.
And t-shirts, yeah. In mid-January. Okay.
I mean, the weather is amazing. Listen, I mean, there's nowhere like L.A. Malibu, being able to go to the beach. Right. The Grove, you know, being able to be outdoors. Like I said, like in New York, you only get to live life a few months out of the year. The rest you're plagued here. It's something's happening every single day. It's a vibrant city.
Yeah.
Without getting too much into politics, it might not be the same as it was, but I'm hoping, you know, it gets a lot better because I love LA and its home.
Right.
But yeah, man, just, you know, being able to go out, have lunch, you know, in Beverly Hills or in Malibu, just sit out, enjoy the beautiful weather.
Yeah.
The Lakers.
Yeah.
I love the Lakers, being able to go to a Laker game.
Right.
We have Luka now.
Luka, man. But I feel, I don't even want to say this out loud, but I feel like we have a ceiling with LeBron.
Yeah,
like,
we do.
I'm not an anti-LeBron guy. I'm a pro LeBron guy, and what he's accomplished is incredible.
But he's done.
You look at his stats. Yeah. He's not done, but I don't.
Yeah,
it can't. There's a ceiling there, man. Yeah. There's a ceiling, and they were doing. It felt like they were doing better earlier this year, before LeBron came back. And like, I know his numbers are great, and I like LeBron, not LeBron either. But you're right. But it is a fun team, though. It's still, they're still fun. They're having some.
What I like about Luka is he's a killer.
Yeah.
And LeBron's not a killer, right? And we were talking about Mamba mentality, and I grew up, you know, with that Kobe killer mentality, and I've missed that.
Yeah.
So to be able to see a young dog in our city, and he's just getting started. I mean, I think once LeBron leaves, and you know, he is the face, but once he's, you know, and when it's his team, I mean, bro, another thing, the next few years in LA are going to be on fire. We have the All-Star game.
Wow.
We have the World Cup.
Yep.
We have the Olympics. I mean, bro, we're on fire, man.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a very, very awesome next couple of years. Okay, before we go, tell us about injury needs. Where do we contact you? What's the best way to get in touch? I know you guys got a new phone number, right?
We got a 1-800 number.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing so much more than just Los Angeles now. We're growing, and you know, we're going to do some pilot programs in other states, but we wanted to get a, you know, 1-800 number. It's 1-800-888-8008.
Okay.
So that's the best way to reach us. Someone's always available 24 hours a day, seven days a week to pick up the phone, you know, help you out, do intake, sign you up, fight for you on the insurance company. And you know, that's the best way. Follow us on Instagram at Injury Needs.
Yes.
You can DM us. We're a little bit slower on DM. We're good on phones.
Okay. At Injury Needs. But make sure you follow them too. Because again, I got to say this, and this is true. I don't know any other attorney. I don't even know if I follow any other attorneys that aren't like a friend or an associate. But he's an attorney with like a fun feed. Like these calls are like interesting and fun to watch. So, I mean, like.
So, you know, I don't really even look at I don't look at us as a law firm.
Yeah.
I look at us as a community, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's really, like, that's been my mission, like, to just build a community. Like,
yeah. These,
you know, the Instagram, you know, the hoodies, like, you know, a lot of people are like, why the fuck are you passing out hundreds of hoodies for free to people? But you know, I want people to feel part of something.
Yeah.
You know, I want my clients to feel part of something. I want to build like a family, a community. And, you know, thank God that's what I've done on social media.
Yeah,
and, you know, at our firm with our employees and with our clients. So that's really what we are. And I welcome, you know, everyone to join that community because we're going to do great things and it's only going to get better and better. 2026 is our year. And with you and your help.
I was going to say, I'm glad I'm part of it. And stay tuned because, you know, we have good giveaways. We got some fun stuff coming up this year and also some fun episodes, man. So we're making moves together and I'm very proud to know you and thankful for what you do for LA and just being a genuine, authentic, good guy. David Uroshami, Uroshami Law Firm, a.k.a. Injury Needs. Make sure you give him a follow. What a great story, man. I really, really thank you for being here.
It's a real honor, man. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, David. I'm so glad you could come. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate that. All right, LA. It's been a minute.
do have a dark curiosity, Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Each week, I'll take you on a dark journey through terrifying true urban legends, bizarre true crime cases, chilling tales of backwoods horror, and more. So if you're looking to join a passionate community of the darkly curious, check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, stay curious.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got a drink for you. As a true rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.